now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Oh, back to the funk intro. That's just still my favorite.
Just for you, dude.
Just for me. Thank
just
you.
Just for you. I'm getting my funk on this morning so we can really podcast.
Wayne's chair
away.
Dancing again.
No, I'm not chair dancing. Not doing it. Nope.
Hey, you
wouldn't
back.
Be prudent.
You're back from Wichita. How was Dorothy and Toto and the whole gang?
You know, you always ask me that, but I've never seen them. Not once since I've been there. No, not Dorothy, not Toto. I saw Penny and Kathy and Paul and John and Jim and...
But not Dorothy and Toto.
Willa Beth and Steve and Marie and all kinds of people.
I think The Wizard of Oz is a wonderful parable.
Of Kansas?
No.
Oh.
The body of Christ.
Oh, you do?
You got the little scarecrow that doesn't have a brain. It's kind of like a little charismatic crowd.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just going to offend a few people just for fun.
Now
just for fun. And then you got the lion who's like, you know, scared of spiritual warfare crowd. You know, like lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. And then you got the tin man.
Yeah.
And he's sort of like the little frozen chosen folks. They just need a little oil and then get over their hurts of the past and... Dorothy's a picture of the bride of Christ dressed in her red ruby slippers, which is the blood of Christ, walking on the yellow brick road of faith, and Toto's the Holy Spirit.
Oh, God.
Oz, you know, is the Old Testament name of God meaning strength. It's all in there. It's really cool. That's why Kansas means so much to me, which why I'll probably never be invited, but
worried.
Kansas means so much to me.
You're pushing it now. So those of you from Kansas listening in to see if we're going to talk about
it. Wizard of Oz. You'll get a revelation from
invite
God.
Invite Brad to come out there and,
and explain Toto.
Get your ruby red shoes on, click your heels together, and go on home.
Well, Myra Gulch is always trying to get Toto in a little box and throw it away and destroy it.
I had real covetous issues on this trip, I got to tell you.
Did you?
Yeah.
You were coveting, Wayne.
I was with two people who living the lives I wish I'd lived.
For real?
So that was tough.
What life were they living?
Vocationally speaking.
So what were you coveting?
Well, they both owned airplanes, little airplanes.
Oh.
One guy just sold his. I got my license when I was 17. I love to fly
you're a pilot.
In little planes. I haven't flown since I was like 25, you know, in terms of on my own license, being pilot in command. But, man, I hear people that the one guy had this little plane for 50 years, flew all over, had a grass strip 75 yards out his back door on his farm, and... He just flew down to New Mexico to see his daughter, flew out to California on vacation with his
Doesn't
wife.
Doesn't that take a lot of gas?
Oh, back then it was, you know, 33 cents a gallon. Now it's, 57 cents or 57 bucks or something. It was just a different deal back then.
Right.
And one gal I met, talked to her and her husband a bit on Sunday morning after I'd taught at one of the local establishments in the area. And she's an air traffic controller out of Dallas, and she, you know, got her own plane, a little hangar, an apartment in a hangar near where she works. So sometimes if the weather allows, she flies back and forth from Wichita.
There's not enough room in my backyard for that.
I know, but I just like going, why is this trip so many people? And I was telling Sarah the other day, you know, that's if I have any regrets, and I really don't, I've lived a very blessed life. God has been so gracious to me in more ways than I could ever explain. But if there's anything I would say I regret, it's that.
You didn't
that didn't happen. Yeah. And in fact, I almost left the ministry, quote unquote, when...
To be a pilot.
No, not to be a pilot, because I wanted to be a pilot for fun.
Just flying planes.
But I wanted to be an air traffic controller, because I wanted to boss people around.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
That's stressful, dude.
Oh, I know it would be greatly stressful.
Do you like it?
You know when Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers for being on strike?
You got excited and said, I'm in.
I would have been in. I begged God.
Oh, this is a side of you I don't know.
Oh.
What is it about air traffic controlling that you just totally dig?
Probably the same thing as pastoring. You tell everybody what to do and they can't argue with you.
You really didn't enjoy that. You didn't do that with intent.
No, but it might have been the same thing. It made me be, you know, head official for football when I was in college. I refereed high school football games, and in Oklahoma, football is the state religion. You know, I mean, that's more important.
You like reffing?
Head reffing. I like being the head guy on the field. I like being the guy. I love taking
shots.
All these planes and putting them down on that runway and doing it safely. I mean, that would just be a hoot.
Really?
I've got a little game I used to play on my computer until it no longer works on the new computers. But
okay.
It was fun. Well, anyway, banter.
I know. It's 522 burn. With the whole dynamic. Well, but what's the one thing that you enjoy most about flying?
Everything.
No, but what? I mean, describe it. Come on. Take us with you, Wade.
I love what being in a small plane. I love hearing the engine start up. They just got a sound. I like taxiing. I like talking to the tower, getting to the runway, taking off. I love just flying over things. Just and you know, I never used it actually in any way that said I could get from A to B faster. Most of my flying was I left this airport, I went out and did all kinds of wild things with the plane, and then I came back and landed it. Or I could really spend 2 hours just land what they call touch and goes, landing and taking off, landing and taking off.
You like that?
Whole putting that plane on that runway soft as you can. It's just and when it does, when you just like a butterfly with broken knees landing that soft. It's just incredible.
Well, that's flying back from D.C., our pilot didn't do a soft land.
Should have been with me in Omaha.
He slammed the plane down. I woke up.
Should have been with me in Omaha. I've never hit that hard on a plane. And I'm always because I'm aware of these things. So as a plane's coming in, I'm going, this guy's not flaring. We're coming down at the runway. And as you
coming
get,
in hot.
As you get, no, this wasn't even hot.
Coming
this was
in
down.
Hot.
This was down. And you're supposed to flare, and he's not flaring. All of a sudden, boom, it slams, and everybody jumps, and we're taxiing in, and the stewardess goes, in case you missed that. We arrived in Omaha. Probably not good for her to make fun of the pilot. I guess he's not listening to that. But and then I heard a story somebody said, I thought this was hilarious, after a plane hit really, really hard on a runway, the pilot was telling the story. And his particular company asks the pilot to stand by the door as people leave.
Maybe we could punch him.
And he didn't want to do it. But it's required. So he goes and stands by the door. And everybody's just kind of gracious, not really acknowledging the fact it was a horrible thing. And said this one elderly lady walking out says, sir, can I ask you something? He says, yeah. And she leans up real close and she said, did we land or were we shot down?
That's good for
hilarious.
All ladies. That's great.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
That's great. So what were you doing in Wichita?
Oh, this was one of those trips where I couldn't even begin to say what I was doing. I was in Wichita for 2 days out in Newton with this HIV/AIDS school bunch. Penny Dugan and Club at New Jerusalem Mission. And they're doing a homeless shelter thing. I spent one morning just talking to homeless people about the love of Christ and how God crawls into our darkest places and loves us out of them. That was a lot of fun. And you with because it's an HIV/AIDS ministry, you know, there's an ongoing concern. There's people that they're helping get free from broken sexuality in their lives. So there's all the, you know, dealing with homosexuality, dealing with transgendered kind of issues. And it was different. We didn't deal with that specifically. We just had a night in a home over 4 nights. I spent a lot of days with the staff, but over 4 nights, we had people come on 2 nights and talk about He Loves Me. We had people come 1 night and talk about the Jake book. And then we had a shack night. People came and a lot of people had read
How'd
it.
How'd that go?
A lot of people had. Yeah, just had a great time. I mean, people are really hungry for it. I notice we're getting really dinged on some of the whole negative book reviews now coming out about the book. But
just a couple.
Yeah, but they're really weird. They're like, you know, this is Sarah Yuna Louisa is back from some India thing, and this is all a New Age book.
Yeah, it's Hindu New Age spirituality. I didn't know that when we were writing it, but oh well.
And then the whole guilt by association thing. You know, Paul's from the emergent crowd. Well, no, he's not.
He's from the I don't go to church crowd.
And we don't either. And then it's, you know, that they compare it to some miracle book.
A Course in Miracles.
You know, the whole.
Yeah.
It's amazing when somebody gets threatened. How much false accusation they'll throw out there. It's not grounded in anything that's true at all. And how much they're willing to do the whole guilt by association thing. If I can just drop emergent or drop some word in there that makes people feel
to afraid. Marginalize it.
And I get tons of emails. What do you think of this? And, you know, I'm writing a response I'm going to blog about in a couple of days. But I just think it's, you know, it's just amazing how misinformed and how. And I think part of it is, to be honest, there's a cynical side of me. I read a lot of the stuff from the religious conservative political movement because of my bridge builders work. And part of it is this. A book gets out there and gets popular. And now I can get a hearing for myself by writing something negative about it. So it's using the popularity of something to draw attention to my website and my deal because now people will pass my review around because honestly.
You really?
Oh, I do know that's true. I know that happens. I don't know that any of the ones that are out right now that motive is behind it. I don't know that, but I do know that there are many motives.
I find it interesting that. You don't, and maybe this is because I'm not as traveled amongst the other religions out there, perhaps. But it would seem to me that Christianity has a little bit of a weird uniqueness to it, that it's so doctrinally, you know, sort of, I don't know, embraced in different segments, that the issue is not, gee, do I know this God for myself and I have a relationship? It's more like, no, here is the creed of what we believe, and I got to have a checklist to see, do you interpret things the way I do? And I'm not sure why it is in Christianity that if you disagree on something, especially in my mind, on non-salvation issues in which there is not the definitive all...
It's not the deity of Christ or his death on a cross, but it's a tangential thing.
In the nuanced arena of, I just have a different opinion, why there is such the vehemence to declare who's right, who's wrong, and they make it almost damnable issues, that if you don't believe like I do or the camp I come from, you're now the enemy. And I'm just going like, what is it?
Fear.
Fear.
Fear. Fear I may not be right. Fear I'm not getting it right. Fear that if you're wrong, you're going to infect me. Fear that, I mean, I think fear, so we talked about last podcast, so dominates the religious landscape that people who write things like this, particularly when they're making up stuff about a book and its origin and its agenda, because you and I were involved in it from the beginning, we can go, okay, this is not even
that didn't happen
in the same universe. But they write as if it is. And I think fear is always the thing that says, the world as I want it is being destroyed. Christianity as I love it, here's my little creedal deal. Because we haven't taught people how to trust Jesus, that even if there is great air in the world, is there?
I think so.
There's great air in the world. Jesus isn't threatened by the error in the world. He's not threatened by the failures. I think people who really know Jesus don't live out of that fear, conspiracy, call something emergent. I know people have written and said, boy, this is from the emergent. You got to come clean this. You know, first of all, it's not from the emergent club. Second of all, I know good brothers and sisters who are part of the emergent conversation. I wouldn't even be willing to say, okay, I want a distance. I don't believe some of their answers. I think some of their end points are humanistic interpretations of things. I do think that's true of the emergent conversation, and it's getting to institutional answers instead of relational ones, even though they're asking good relational questions. But I have brothers and sisters in that conversation that I love deeply and love the God I love. And so part of it is guilt by association. And then I'm saying, well, hold on a minute. I don't believe what they're saying, but I don't mind being associated with them as brothers and sisters either.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of their journey.
Yeah.
But people who don't know God and the way he works, I think, are consumed with fear. And they see religion as this little fragile glass rose that you can't let anybody get near it because it's going to shatter and break. And I think religion is that fragile, to be honest. I don't think Jesus is. I don't think Jesus is.
No, not at all.
But and that brings up another story, Brad. I've been wondering, and I don't even know what I think of this, but having come from a group that focuses on a lot of gay issues and sexual brokenness, and then we had an incident here a week and a half ago. It was a young kid, 14 years old, shot and killed in a computer lab at a junior high school that is a feeder school into my wife's high school district.
Ooh.
So that brings a shooting very close to home. It turns out this kid had some kind of thought he was gay, said he at 14, in the confused hormones of youth, I think it's kind of absurd that we're having people identify that way, but he at least did. He wanted to wear eyeshadow to school and lipstick, and he had some high-heeled boots, and he seemed okay with people making fun of him. I'm sure he wasn't okay with being shot. That seems a little extreme. But this is what, you know,
he was shot because he was coming out of the closet as gay and sort of flaunting that?
Well, we don't know that. We know he was doing that. And then this kid, I guess, really had an issue with that kid. And in fact, we know somebody who knows the boy who was the shooter. I don't know if you know that, but I won't tell you that on the podcast. But afterwards, I will. We know somebody very close to that child. And just said, gosh, the most incredible kid, never trouble in the world, you know, in a class with our daughter, how he comes to school with the gun and shoots this kid. And now they want to lynch him. They want to try him as an adult and, you know, ruin his life forever, which he's done a horrible, horrible thing. But the question, I mean, this is a hot issue in California. I deal with bridge builders all the time. We've had a couple of laws passed recently that just say schools have to work very, very hard to ensure that kids who are coming out as gay or male children that dress and act more effeminate. You know, schools used to say to kids who are getting teased for being effeminate, you know, man up, dude. You know, if a school counselor says that now, pull out your checkbook, baby, because you're going to be writing a check to somebody for a lot of money. I mean, they really are working because of these kinds of things, because gay kids are, or kids that are perceived to be gay, and that's a lot of the language.
Right.
As I deal with individual, 82% of kids who are harassed for sexual orientation discrimination issues, 82% are heterosexual students. You know what it was like in a boy's locker room in high school?
Oh, gosh,
for the young,
yeah.
The weak. They didn't have to be gay at all, but they got called that.
Oh.
And that marginalizes them.
I grew up, and one of my best friends was not exactly the most macho guy, more of an egghead nerd dude, but he lived on my street, and he was one of my best friends.
Yeah.
I got questioned as to whether I was gay because of my friendship with him.
Wow.
And you're dealing with that kind of dynamic and just going like, my lands. No, it's not fun, but, it is the constant landscape of what you have to deal with. And I think junior high, middle schools are some of the most unwonderful environments for kids to grow up in. Because
I got called Jane all through high school.
And I'm sorry, I've done it to you myself.
Yeah, I got called Jane the other night. Someone was in our house and mispronounced my name, and somehow Jane came
Wakeupson.
Up. But I was called Jane Wakeupson by an eighth grade substitute teacher, and
and it stuck.
My classmates thought it was hilarious. So I was Jane all the way through high school. I could have sued today. I could have made huge money today with the laws that now protect that. But Christians are always on the other side of those laws. This is what really troubles me. And I've got a press release here from one of our top Christian advocacy groups in California, and they're calling public schools now sexualized indoctrination centers, and all our children must be pulled out of public schools in the next 5 years. That's what they're recommending. This is a fairly influential group. This is not some fringe little nuthead group. This is a pretty mainline thing. And what they're concerned about is all the kids are going to go to school. I think here's one of the fears that Christians, these kinds of believers, if they are that, seem to have. And that if you hang out near someone who is gay, you can catch it. It's kind of like the flu. And, if you're gay or effeminate or whatever, then, or your friend is, you'll catch it. So the thing is, we want these kids that don't ask, don't tell, stuff them in the closet. Yeah, you might be that way, but just don't confuse anybody at this school that my child may have to deal with the fact that you've got some, which I would say is sexual brokenness. I'm not sitting here saying, God makes mistakes and people are, just born that way. I do think we don't have a clue as to how we get the temptations we get or what we have to overcome in our lives. We all were born with certain things that tempt us and certain other things that don't tempt us. And I don't like taking credit for sins I don't commit that I've never been tempted towards. And, and yet some believers want to. And now, what kind of training do we do at the school? Should Christians be more involved instead of saying, hey, it's not our issue, man. We just don't want to see this happen. Do we have a responsibility to protect kids that may be broken?
And I think, yes, you do, because you look at the Gospels and Jesus seemingly was a defender of the defenseless. He was the guy that was going to the marginalized of their day. And he seemed to be a champion of them, not a condoner of brokenness.
Exactly.
Not saying this is great.
But a lover of broken people.
Yeah.
And my question is, if this kid thinks he's gay at 14, do we do him a favor by making him hide that in the closet so we don't have to deal with it? Or does God get to sin faster when it's in the light than when it's hidden? We're still using that shame thing to drive people
into the dark,
sexual temptations into. And there was a letter in the paper.
You see, I think the reason that happens is because most people aren't comfortable walking in the light.
Yeah.
I'm going to get exposed too. So I'm not really interested in your stuff being flaunted, and I don't want you to push your stuff on my kids. And I mean, I do think a lot of it is insecure and it is fear-based, but I wonder if it's because we really haven't kind of tasted or drunk deeply from the well of God touching us and making us whole.
Yep.
Because I do know that the more secure you are in the work of God in you to transform you, things like that don't scare me like they did when I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
Very much.
There's a second grader. I got this from my religious watch service that provides.
I'm not subscribed to that.
I know. I think it ruins me. But for bridge builders, I've done this. There's a second grader who thinks he's a boy, who thinks he's a girl.
A second grader?
Second grader. and he wants to come to school as a girl because he's just totally unhappy as a boy. He's the parents say he's always been drawn to girl things, not their agenda for him. He, you know, they're all dealing with what can he dress and come to school, and the Christian groups again up in arms about this kid.
Where's this?
This is in Colorado.
Well, that's not a great place to wear a dress.
Not if you're a boy. But what do we say about that? You know, part of me says, look, the women wanted to wear pants 40 years. I was alive when this happened. I was alive when the first woman wore a pair of pants to school. And, boy, she was a cross-dressing, no-good-for-nothing idiot. And now virtually every woman I know wears more pants than skirts and dresses. I mean, fashions change. Part of me wants to say, you know what, if you want to wear a skirt.
I've been to Scotland, they wear dresses.
If you want to go, I've been into some religious services where it looked like they were wearing dresses. And even on young boys lighting candles, I thought was a little odd. But part of me says that, you know, if we could get past this, it would be good for everybody. You know, if a guy wants to wear eyeshadow, wear eyeshadow. I don't care. I think you're weird. I'm going to look by with a roll of my eyes and go, hey, that's a bit odd. But if you want to, it's no skin off my nose. Here's what I thought of when I was listening to all this, because I don't think this would ever happen. I think it would. I wonder if it's a response to this. There's a story told of a, and I think this was in Montana, if I remember. I don't remember the facts. I was going to look it up. I've got the article buried somewhere in my files, but I have a clue where to look for it. Jewish family moves onto a street. They put a menorah in their window. And within 2 or 3 weeks, there had been a number of incidences of gunshots through the window or rocks thrown through the window. And what the community, the street they lived on did, most of the, this is a conservative Christian area, as I remember the story, they all went and bought menorahs and put it in their windows to hide the person who really wanted one in their window. And I thought, wow, if that isn't a demonstration of the love of Christ, I don't know what is.
Wow.
You know, I don't agree with your deal, but I also don't agree with people picking on you, beating up on you, shooting you, harassing you. So what I'm going to do is risk my home by putting a menorah in my window. So when that guy comes down the street now, whoever's doing this, they don't know which home it is, because every home has a lighted menorah in their window.
That's kind of wild.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Now, I think the answer to this would be, what, every kid at this school wear eyeshadow and lipstick to school. I mean, that'd be obviously very weird. But I'm thinking, how do we demonstrate to this world that just because we think what you're doing represents a brokenness, sinful place in your heart that we hope God heals, that we're better off cramming it in the dark than we are letting you live it in the light and come to the end of it?
See, I don't think you have the capacity to do what you're saying unless you've really been kind of touched by God's love and acceptance for yourself. I think the fear base that when some other kid is coming and flaunting his thing, the insecurity in us says, I don't want you pushing your agenda on us. Because, you know, I have, as a parent, when I hear some of the things that get said in school, I do kind of sit there like, what is that teacher doing? And where are they coming from? Because it's a different belief structure than where I'm at. And so you do kind of go like, gosh, what gives you the right to kind of present yourself as an authority and shaping the mind and heart of my kid? And it's like, well, here's the deal. If you're absent from that dialogue in your own kid's life, then you are in trouble, because you've largely just farmed off the responsibility of raising them and educating them to
Absolutely.
Somebody else. And so I
Absolutely.
Do recognize why you might be up in arms. But I don't think the answer is, oh, how dare they. Get involved. You be involved in your own kid's upbringing. Because I look at, you know, my son Jared, 13 years old. He's not enjoying middle school right now. There is so much drama that comes with the onset of hormones. So much drama. Okay?
I remember it
Do
well.
Do you? I mean, it is so much drama. And yet you sit there and it's like, there is no value in trying to protect Jared from this. It's more just, how do I crawl in there and help him sort it out? Not, don't cry, don't have those emotions, or, gee, I can control these kids from not being jerks. You know what? You can't do anything other than crawl in there with him.
But you're a rarity among Christian parents. I think most Christian parents I've known, would you think this is true, want to always change the environment so my child is never challenged. That's mostly what we want to do.
I do think that's why you have the culture wars, is because it's trying to control the turf, and I want it on my terms.
Right.
And I just, it's like, you know, I don't have any hope that that's ever going to happen. So I would sooner prepare my kid to navigate through it, because it's like, you know what? If I try to put him in a wonderfully comfort-controlled world, that just is not the world I live in.
It isn't for any of us. But
you're not empowering a kid to live the life of Christ.
But people are trying to preserve that world, because for a long time it was. For a long time, if you were a gay kid or an effeminate boy or liked wearing skirts, you just wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it to class. You wouldn't do it to school. And so nobody else had to deal with it. Now they're adults actually fighting for, if you think you're a girl, then you get to use the girls' restroom. And now you've got parents of junior high girls going, I don't want a boy in there with a skirt on. Even if he does have a skirt on and long hair and think he's a girl, I don't want him in there. So then you do unisex. He's not safe in the boys' restroom. I'll say that for sure. He's not safe there.
He will not come out alive.
You're not safe in a boys' restroom as a heterosexual male if you're not a lineman for the football team. I remember that. Particularly if they're calling you Jane when you're in there.
Yeah. I remember that. Here comes the swirly.
So I'm not sure what the answer is for this stuff. I'm really not, but I think we're getting it wrong. I think we're saying to the world, we want to conform you.
Push you in the darkness.
For our good, first of all. But then I wonder even if it's for this kid's good. If you want to wear a skirt to school, how does that ultimately hurt me? It doesn't validate you. It doesn't vindicate you. I might say, okay, there's a weird dude right there.
I'm not sure it's going
to
help.
There was a kid that wore a skirt to my kid's high school. I saw him one day after school. I said, that's a guy. He said, yeah, you wear skirts, you know, a couple times a week. I said, everybody okay with that? I said, everybody just laughs at it. I mean, not him, but behind the back, they're going, okay, that's a bit odd.
Right.
But they deal with the first girls that wore pants. And what I'm wondering about for this kid, now obviously he's dead, so you don't get to answer this for him, but I look at the parable of the prodigal, or what I like to call the incredible father. This father pays for his boy. You know, you got this bent of sin in your heart and life, and you want to live a certain way? Well, here's the money. Go do it. Go do it to the ultimate. Is there something Jesus is saying? And I don't know the answer to this, but I wonder if there isn't something Jesus saying in that parable of, it is better for you to live your sin in the light than to keep being forced to live in a way that's inauthentic for you, even if that inauthentic is, or that authentic is broken.
See, I think you're hitting the nail on the head there, because the reality is, I think God is wanting us to come front and center and be honest with ourselves. Even if you're absolutely confused and he knows you can't tell up from down, I think he would.
Or boy from girl.
Yeah, I think he would sooner you walk right into the floodlight of his love, life, and truth and go black is white, white is black.
I have not a clue what's going on here. Yeah.
And then dialogue with him to a place that he would probably like to lead you. Now, here, remember Brokeback Mountain?
Oh, boy.
Okay,
you're not going to compare that to some denomination, are you? These are the charismatics. I don't even know if I want to tell you if I saw it.
Yes. I did see it. I was on the Screen Actors Guild nominating committee. They sent me screeners, and I got to watch all this stuff.
You're so famous.
I was curious to just sit there, okay. Christians are so up at arms. This is so foul. They're ruining, you know, cowboyhood. And, you know, I mean, just, you sit there and it's like, okay.
I understand that. Ruined it for me.
There's not a whole lot about the movie that I sat there and went, yeah, great. That's wonderful.
So why are you bringing
it
up?
Okay. Well, at the end of it, I'm not going to, you know, I don't think he's ruining it for anyone.
It's been out a few years.
They totally, you know, some good old boys basically beat the snot out of Jake Gyllenhaal and killed him. And because he's gay.
Yep.
And, you know, you're bringing up this story. I'm just going like,
fear again, isn't it?
I don't really think this is any different necessarily than that. And you're just going like, gosh, what is it that ever justifies that which I'm afraid of? I'm going to kill. Yeah. I mean, well, the disciples are walking through an area. Jesus doesn't get received. The, you know, James and John
called out
fire
from heaven.
And you sit there and it's like, I don't understand in a follower of Christ's life, where in the world you ever see the example of Jesus in terms of where do we get permission that I'm now going to destroy somebody for what they believe, for how they're different,
right?
For the lack of reception that they get.
Right, and that's one piece of it. And the other piece of it is this, because there's a letter today I read from a woman in her 50s who just found out her husband is gay, has been cheating on her their entire married life.
Oh.
But he felt, again, is he just a total fraud? He wanted to fake this marriage? He probably, most of the people I've met in that kind of situation, particularly those on the homosexual side of this thing, actually keep trying to live the way God wants them to live as a heterosexual. So they keep doing those right things on the outside while they have this whole hidden life underneath that when it finally gets exposed for what it is, devastates a 30-year-old marriage, devastates kids that are part of that. Have we done – I understand the part that says, okay, I want a world that's not so conflicted for my children, and I don't want to see people sin paraded on the streets. But you know what? Read the financial section of your paper, and you see greed paraded there every darn day, every day. Greed's okay in this Christianity of today. Greed's fine. Busyness is fine. Gossip is fine. Making up lies about somebody to discredit them, that's okay. We celebrate that. We'll go to those blogs to read that stuff. We celebrate just about every, except sex. Boy, if it's a sexual brokenness, sexual sin, that we want in the closet, that we don't want to have to face. And I'm wondering, are we doing enough to reach out to the marginalized for their benefit, not to condone? We had this discussion. You don't have to condone it to love the person trapped in it. You don't.
Yeah, that's what I think has been so profoundly missing. And I know we talked about it last week, but we haven't learned how to love what we don't condone. And I find that so just strikingly different about Jesus that you're just going like, nowhere does he condone people's brokenness. Nowhere does he say, yeah, sin is okay.
Yeah, go for it.
But nowhere does he stop loving the broken. And the power of that love and the power of that acceptance is, in fact, healing to the broken. I mean, I think...
And he doesn't encourage us to live a lie. The hypocrisy of I'm pretending to be something on the outside and being very inauthentic because – and this is what I think the religious community in this nation really loves. We have this religious Judeo-Christian ethic overlay, and we do get to marginalize people who don't fit into that. We do. If you're gay, if you're wearing eyeshadow, if they call you Jane, we can jump all down your throat. We do want you to feel embarrassed, shamed, and hide in a closet somewhere. We're very, very happy with that. And that's where I'm saying it. I just think we're making a huge mistake. I'm not happy with you having to pretend to be something for me because you're afraid I'm going to hurt you if I disagree with you.
Well, you just bring this down to the simple dynamic of relationships. And do you want someone to tell you what you want to hear or do you want the truth? When you know that those are different.
Yep.
There's no joy in that. You're sitting there going like, when I know I'm not getting the truth out of someone, it doesn't. They could say whatever they want. If I know it's not in their heart and it's just in their words,
yeah. It
to me it's like, what are you doing? I would sooner you be honest with what is, because then you have something to work with. Then there's something to walk out.
I agree. I don't think religious people are there, though. I think the religious people say, I'd rather you live a lie around me so I'm not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. If I spend a whole day...
I think that sets people up for a complete fall that is far more destructive. I mean, you think of Ted Haggard, okay?
Yeah.
Do I know him? Do you know him? Do we know him personally? No. We only know him from a distance. From a dynamic of what led to that implosion? Well, I think it's the same dynamic. Where was that guy allowed to be real with whatever he was struggling with?
Yep.
How did he come to a place where, how do I deal with what's happening in me? Because that's not okay.
Right.
And especially if you're in some like role of leadership, it's like, where do you sort that stuff out?
But as one guy said, he could be a pastor as long as his drug addiction and homosexuality with prostitutes was hidden.
Yeah.
As soon as it comes to the light, he can't do anything anymore. He's just done.
Right.
And it's, you know, I don't know him, but I do know temptation.
Uh-huh.
I do know brokenness. I do know things I've hidden in my heart. Because you got to hide them to get along, to get around, to not whatever. And I agree. I just think we've got to encourage people to come to the light, even if they're not repenting yet. I think the foray of the prodigal son, go sin to the hilt, here's the money to do it. I wonder if that 50-year-old who finally comes out as a homosexual and finds that he's been cheating on his wife all this time. And I think people like that and people like Haggard. I don't think those are chosen hypocrisy. And I think if you really got behind most of those stories, it's not that I'm really living this lie. It's I fall to this thing. And I cry all the way back home, tell God I'm going to be different, beg him to make me different.
And I don't have a place to sort it out.
And I'm going
to
be okay. I'm going to be until all that pressure builds up again and religion doesn't work. Then the temptation, the fall again. I spent all my effort hiding it. I spent all my effort. I come back. I don't doubt that any time Haggard drove back from Denver to Colorado Springs from that gay prostitute, he wasn't saying, God's horrible. I'm so sorry with you. I'm going to never do it again. I have no doubt that's true. But if we don't allow people to come to the light, if we don't recognize that we're all broken and we all struggle with sin, if that's not up front in our relationships with people, then we keep living a lie. And the world keeps getting broken, and we are the Taliban in the culture telling everybody they've got to live like us or we're going to shame them. No, we don't want them to get shot. I don't think any Christians are happy this kid got shot. I wouldn't even begin to advance that. But neither when people say we've got to do something about this discrimination and that it escalates. Most of the shooters in California who shot at high schools are not the gay kid getting shot. They're a kid who wasn't gay, that got accused of being gay and got called all the gay words and felt marginalized in the school. Brings a gun and shoots his classmates. That's almost always true. Our legislators are saying, can we deal with this in a way that makes sense? And what the Christian groups are saying is, no, we can't. No, we don't want to. No, leave it alone. We want our kids to be in an environment where they never have to face the fact that some kids grow up in this world confused with that temptation and confusion. And they've got their own confusions. It may not be sexual. It may be religious arrogance. But they've got their own. So now I'm upset. See what you've done to me? Next time, I'm wearing eyeshadow when we do a podcast.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.